All right, it's time for kind of another book review. I'm not going to fully review this morning at this time. I'm going to review a chapter. But this was my July book, The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter. Embrace discomfort to reclaim your wild, happy, healthy self. And I've mentioned this in passing a few times. I finished it, it was my July book of the month, but I finished it maybe a little bit into August. It's a great book. He talks about wanting to do something uncomfortable. And there's this new movement. In his case, it was go on a hunt. And so he went with a couple of guys who went hunting. And they don't like modern day hunting where you sit in a blind, put some food out, wait for the deer to walk up and shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
They want to go hunting the way our ancestors hunted. So the three of them went to Alaska and stalked a herd of caribou.
Wow.
And it took 5 weeks, and their goal was to take out the oldest caribou, the one with the biggest antlers and most scarred up body, one that had already lived a good life.
So they're looking for the one with the biggest rack.
The biggest rack. Mm. Then kill it, dress it, haul it back to their camp, cook it, eat it, and live in the wild without cell coverage, anything like that, for 4 or 5 weeks. Wow. So the story is about that, and I'll get more into detail at another time of my choosing about that story. But within the story, he also goes into our comfort crisis, how ridiculously comfortable we are today and how it's not good for us. It's good for us in some ways, obviously, having shelter and food and things like that, but how it's so anti how we are wired.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most interesting chapters is the chapter I wanted to talk about this morning, and it's the chapter on boredom. And he says, rediscover boredom, ideally outside, for minutes or hours or days. And I'm going to read a little bit from this chapter. Thanks to technology, he says, I rarely let my mind wander. I always have a phone, TV, computer, or other digital device to attend to. The average American each day touches his phone 2,617 times.
Wait, repeat that.
The average American each day touches his phone 2,617 times.
That's just not possible.
Touches it. So I looked up this study, and that's what they found, and they actually think that that might be an underestimation. Now, actually using your phone, like you go to an app and you are mm-hmm. scrolling, I think that number is about 200 times a day, but you touch it 2,617 times a day.
Jeez,
and I tried to count this morning just from the time I woke up to the time I got here into the studio, and I think I had already touched it something like 30 times.
Because you're keeping track of it. You're putting it in your bag, your pocket.
Right.
You're checking to see what time it is, whatever. Okay.
And the average American spends 2 hours and 30 minutes staring at that screen. The study also identified a large group of heavy users who spent more than 4 hours a day on their phones. Some of this may sound a little familiar because I did that book review, The Anxious Generation, about our kids and cell phone use, smartphone use. Well, a lot of this also translates to adults. These are numbers for adults. So he says, let's say I live 60 more years and keep up that pace. I'll have spent 7.5 years of the rest of my life looking at my phone.
Holy smokes.
And he says, let's face it, I'm not using the device to read literary classics, learn a new language, or wire money to widows and orphans. He says, smartphones are not only stealing our boredom, they are also shoving society dangerously close to, as screenwriter and satirist Mike Judge calls it, idiocracy status.
No.
Yes, yes.
He references idiocracy. And he says, for 2.5 million years, or about 100,000 generations, we had nothing digital in our lives. Now the average person spends 11 hours and 6 minutes a day using digital media. That's cell phones, TV, audio, computers.
Dang.
Average person, 11 hours, 6 minutes a day. Boredom is indeed dead. He says, though, that boredom can actually be really, really uncomfortable no matter how healthy you are. And that's why we all seek this digital escape.
Right.
We don't like being bored. Gordo,
we've
this came
programmed
up-
out bored time. That's why when you're sitting at a stoplight, you can't even take the 15, 20, 30 seconds there
to look at your
to sit there and look at your surroundings and just be with your own thoughts. You reach for your phone to hit the scroll, see what's going on. I need to program this time. I don't want this downtime.
And isn't that amazing that you can't take 10 seconds at a stoplight without grabbing your phone because you can't be bored for 10 seconds?
Right.
So he talks to a bunch of experts and he says, one of them says, boredom is neither good nor bad. It's how you respond to boredom that makes it good or bad. And this one scientist studied this group. He recruited volunteers and put them in a neuroimaging scanner. And he says, then we induced those people into a mood of being bored. We had them watch two guys hanging laundry for 8 minutes. He says, and yeah, that does succeed in making people bored S-less. Then when he looked at the neuroimages of the bored people, he found their insular cortex in their brain had deactivated.
I noticed that.
He says that part of the brain is important for processing information that you think is relevant for your goals right now. So it's down-regulated because there's nothing in that video that's important to your goals. Mm. And basically, your brain has two modes, focused mode and unfocused mode.
Focus. I think I only have one of those.
Focused mode is a mind at attention. It's on when we are processing information, completing a task, checking our cell phone, watching TV, listening to a podcast, having a conversation, or anything else that requires us to attend to the outside world. That is focused mode.
Okay.
Unfocused mode occurs when we're not paying attention. It's inward mind-wandering, a rest state that restores and rebuilds the resources needed to work better and more efficiently in the focused mode. So it's like a physical workout. You go to the gym, but you also need that recovery time so that you're better the next time you go to the gym.
Right.
The mind works the same way. And he says in the 11 hours and 6 minutes of attention that we're handing over to digital media, that's not free. It's all spent in focused mode. When we kill boredom by burying our minds in a phone, TV, or computer, our brain is putting forth a shocking amount of effort. Modern life overworks the hell out of our brains. And our lack of collective boredom is causing us to reach crisis levels of mental fatigue. Americans who are increasing, they say because of all this, Americans are increasingly picky, impatient, distracted, and demanding. Mm-hmm. All of this falls under the umbrella of insufferable.
Yeah. That's what it's doing to us.
And don't we all sense that?
Yeah, so does he suggest that how much time do you take away from everything and just have that downtime where you're not being affected by some sort of electronic piece?
Well, as much as you can, and let that boredom lead you to different paths, different ways to fill your time that that are not YouTube or the internet, you know, doing something else where you're learning a language or you're playing outside or you're doing anything else to occupy your time. You have to get to that point where you're bored and then let it lead you somewhere healthy right. instead of somewhere unhealthy.
And I know all this sounds a little yelling at clouds, but it is true when you think about it. I mean, like kids, they don't have to invent stuff to do because stuff has already been invented. They don't have to be creative and come up with a game to play with their brothers or sisters or friends because they have games that are already there downloaded that someone's designed for them to hold their attention rather than coming up with things to hold your attention. And the adult version is this. If you're never bored, then you're not going to try to create things that will satisfy and break that boredom because you have devices that do it for you.
Right.
Or accomplish things. You know you have things on your list, but you think,
What's more fun, doing the stuff that I need?
See that goat thing again where he jumps from one house to the other.
That sounds pretty kick-ass. Will you send me that?
Yeah, I'm going
to
send you that.
I have a bunch of stuff to do today, but I'd rather watch that instead.
He says, we have less tolerance for distress these days. If we feel something unpleasant like boredom, typically we would have just had to be with that unpleasantness in most of the history of man. Mm-hmm. And then we would find a productive outlet, but we don't have to do that anymore. We simply just pick up our phone to distract ourselves. They call it junk food for the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says, each time we reflexively take out our phone or turn on a computer to kill, or the TV to kill boredom, it attaches another tiny anchor to our stress tolerance, dragging it lower and lower. Scientists have found that daily stressors like lines or waiting for something can improve our resistance to some brain diseases if we simply suffer through them and shrug them off instead of having to fill that time with staring at our phone.
Right. Well, this goes back to that theory I bang on about it, that there's something wrong with the frictionless existence. Like, so much of humanity and culture has been designed to do away with suffering. Even I'm talking suffering with the small s, the, you know, just the friction of everyday existence. We make devices that make things easier to do. We outsource this. So then basically all we become is a blob that is a receptor to amusement.
Yes.
And we have no necessity in our lives. We don't have to get things done. We don't have to work. We get a universal basic income going here, and then that's not really tied into it. But then all we do is try to amuse the mind when we've got all of our other needs satisfied. We joke about us having such easy lives compared to our great-great-grandfathers, mm-hmm. and we do. But there's going to be a price to pay. There's no free lunch anywhere in all this,
right?
In human existence. So you're going to get something, but you're going to have to pay something to get it. And there's a certain mind sickness that I think will eventually, and maybe it's already settling in, to the fact that now we've got ourselves to where we can't even stand 30 seconds of downtime. And what Craig's talking about is that kind of exposure therapy to discomfort.
Yes.
And now we've got, and culture's moving more and more towards this idea, like everyone's entitled to have no discomfort, whether it be socially or whether it has to do with dealing with difficult people or being called a name or all those things that we know that are wrong. You know, we don't know how to handle the situation when they come up,
mm-hmm.
because we have no exposure to them. And you do have to be exposed to resistance. That's why we call it resistance training. That's how you get strong,
right?
Is you have to encounter resistance.
Yeah.
And that, it literally means something for the physical body, but it also metaphorically is important for the mental body, for the spiritual body.
Mm-hmm.
To encounter resistance is how you get strong.
You're exactly right about all of that. I completely agree with you. And you would love this book because that is the basic theme of the book. That's why he...
I know
everything
I've thought of, I always find out, someone's already got that covered and is done. I did it much better, too, 20 years ago.
But you would also love it because you like hunting. You've been on some good hunting trips, and that's exactly why they undertook this incredibly difficult hunting expedition, to be uncomfortable, to not take a shower for 5 weeks, to not have cell phone coverage for 5 weeks, to be in sub-zero temperatures for 5 weeks, and to do what man has done for hundreds of thousands of years.
Right. I know. Yeah, that is fascinating to me. That's why you do hunting is no good if there's no resistance to it. If you can just press a nuclear button and blow up all the deer,
right.
You know, that's not hunting, even though you are killing the animal.
Yeah.
The idea is that there has to be some level of difficulty to it. You have to sit out in the elements. You have to, bow hunting is, you know, to me, much more attractive than even gun hunting.
And yeah.
There's got to be resistance to it to make the journey worthwhile. And that's always what every peak human experience is. When you think back to your life, whether it's giving birth to a child or running your first marathon, it's not just the crossing the finish line. That's not what makes the finish line so important. What makes the finish line important is the 26 miles that came before. It's the suffering that it takes to get somewhere. It's the resistance that you had to overcome that makes the accomplishment so meaningful?
Well, and I think that affects how we evaluate things, too. We evaluate things like, well, what'd you do? Well, they didn't quite get there. They didn't quite win. No, failure. No, they, for 6 months, they right. played really well, and they accomplished a lot. Not failed.
Yeah. Human striving has value, even always, if it doesn't.
Yeah. And when it relates to sports, it's always been about championships, but I just think we have even a more critical view of it now that we don't appreciate the journey to a World Series or the playoffs. It's just, that's just kind of filling our time until the real stuff gets here.
And we'll do a full segment on the hunt and that broader topic of needing to experience discomfort next week. I'll review the full book then. I just wanted to talk about the boredom chapter here in this segment because I found it so interesting. And he does mention that most of us, we're uncomfortable with ourselves being bored, but we're also uncomfortable when we see somebody who's bored. And he said that he was trying to practice being bored in his house, and he was just on his bed lying there. And his wife walked in and said, "What's going on?" And he said, "I'm just sitting here with my thoughts." And she goes, "Oh my God, I thought you had a stroke or something."
Why would Where's you your phone? Choose to not do anything?
Because we never see anybody bored these days.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So that's the book. It's The Comfort Crisis. I'll give you a full review next week at a time of my choosing.